editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Podomatic, and Spotify. And if you so choose, please head over to Apple Podcasts, give us all the stars. It helps people find us. Today, I have my friend Mark Berman, editor-in-chief of Programming Insider, back with me to talk about TV reboots and revivals, of which there are tons this pilot season. Mark went through and did a list of the best and the worst over the years, and that is posted on Daily Brief at brief.promaxbda.org if you want to go check it out. And we're going to talk about it today. Hello, Mark. Welcome back.
Hey, Paige. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. This little project was quite a blast.
Oh, good. Okay, we'll get into it. I'm just going to talk a little bit for a minute about the reboots that we're currently seeing. So I think, and this will become clear as we talk about your list, but reboots in a way have always been a thing. They tend to ebb and flow like everything else in TV. I think this recent round seems somewhat spurred by Netflix, which brought back shows such as Fuller House, Gilmore Girls, Arrested Development, and One Day at a Time. And that show we'll talk about more later. And then I think after that, networks sort of perked up their ears. We saw a lot of interest in the politically themed video that the cast of Will and Grace did prior to the 2016 election. And then they decided to bring it back. And that show met with surprising success. Roseanne is about to debut on ABC with the original cast, including John Goodman. So is American Idol, although I almost don't consider that a reboot because it only went off the air in April 2016. Showtime revived Twin Peaks this year after 25 years off the air. Fox did something similar with X-Files two seasons ago. The CW brought back Dynasty this year, although I'm not totally sure anybody noticed that. CBS plans to reboot Murphy Brown next season with the original cast, including Candace Bergen. And then, as you mentioned in your piece, Jerry Seinfeld told Ellen DeGeneres on her daytime talk show a couple weeks ago that a Seinfeld reunion isn't even out of the realm of possibility. And then looking toward the development season, we have Magnum PI on CBS, and that show just cast its Magnum, J. Rodriguez. I'll be interested to see how that goes. I feel like Alden Ehrenreich in the upcoming movie Solo. I just think it's very hard to go back and fill that actor's shoes because those actors are very charismatic. You know, Tom Selleck and Harrison Ford are very charismatic people who I'm not sure that you can really play them, but we will see. We also have Party of Five on Freeform, maybe Charmed and Roswell on the CW, and an all-female version of The Greatest American Hero, and the list even goes on. So, Mark, we've talked about some of this before, but what do you think is driving all of this?
Well, I think, personally, you know, we're in an era of peak TV where we have more television than ever before, which means that for any show on any outlet, it's become more difficult to attract an audience. My thinking is these network executives on any outlet, they're thinking these are familiar shows, they're familiar characters, and this will give us a better chance of attracting an audience, which in some ways is very odd because in the way the media works, the target audience tends to be the millennial group, the younger viewers. So if you're going to reboot something like a Murphy Brown, they're not going to remember that show. So they're really starting from scratch with the millennials. But I really think it's all about figuring out a way to get the most sampling for these shows, which has become really incredibly challenging when you have over 500 scripted series on the air. That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think two things. One, I think it helps with the marketing if you have a pre-branded product. So it's something that people have already heard of. So you don't have to pave a new road with it. And then two, in terms of attracting millennials or Gen Z, to some extent for them, it's totally new. Whereas then you also have this built-in audience from before. So I think that could be seen as a win-win. I'm not sure it always works that way, but that's sort of the optimistic way of looking at it.
I agree without a doubt. I mean, but it's amazing. Listen, this is, as you said, this is not a new concept. This has been going on since the beginning of television back in, you know, even in the 50s, we started seeing revivals, but I've never seen so many at you know, shows coming back. I mean, it's bursting from the seams.
Yeah, it is.
And I just think it's getting crazy already.
So of the new list, the ones that I just mentioned, which ones do you think have the best chance of succeeding or maybe are the most interesting, and which are you sort of less optimistic about?
Well, quite frankly, when I first heard this, I rolled my eyes. And then when I realized what outlet it was for, I thought this could be a good idea. Party of Five. Now, I watched the original. I watched for the 6 seasons. I was there every week. And I'm like, don't bring this back. But then again, it's for Freeform. They're not doing exactly the same thing that, you know, the parents in this reboot are still alive. So this is a whole, it's a kind of a different scenario. And I think for Freeform, they attract young women, and I think this could be an option. So I actually thought that was a decent idea. I think of any of them, I think that has the best shot. I've been very optimistic about Roseanne, and we've talked about that.
Right.
I just think it's the right time to do it. And the fact that they got the whole cast back is really, you know, is very positive. So I think that's really positive. And I agree with you. I don't consider American Idol. I mention it as a reboot, but it barely left and it's back already.
Right.
So, and you know, I will say one more thing. You know, I tend to sway back and forth with my opinions. Originally, I thought Murphy Brown was a terrible idea. Then I thought Murphy Brown was a good idea. Now I'm kind of in the middle. You know, the more I think about it, I say to myself, the younger audience that the networks want, they're not going to know who Murphy Brown is. But then again, for CBS...
I was going to say, does CBS want that audience? I don't know if they care.
Well, CBS is probably going to put it right back where it aired, Monday at 9 o'clock in the fall, and we'll see what happens. But I just don't know if, you know, bringing back Mad About You, if that happens, or The Office, if that happens, and particularly The Office, why would you want to bring it back when it was really falling off the mat when Steve Carell left, and he's not going to come back? So
I feel like that's
sure
like a reboot of a reboot. The Office was not a reboot, but it was an adaptation, right? So you had The Office
right.
on the BBC, and then you had The Office in the US, and then you'd be, I don't know. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of that cast has gone on to bigger and better things. So I don't know how many of them you could get back anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So technically they'll have probably some of the supporting players, you know, the characters of Stanley and, you know, people like that will probably come back, you know, but then again, they haven't announced they're moving forward.
Yeah,
on it.
It's
I know it's in the works.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are all speculated with the exception, of course, of Roseanne and American Idol, which are coming, you know, American Idol, I think is March 11th. Roseanne is the 27th, but and of course, you know, we have to, you know, and the networks are now looking at Will and Grace and saying, wow, this worked, bringing it back. Now we're going to, let's bring back 100 shows now. So that's how, you know, they see something that works and they want to jump on the bandwagon. So that's how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I do think there is a whole bandwagon thing going on. And in your story, you mentioned even more. There's so many on it. You can't even keep track of it.
It's endless.
Okay.
It's endless.
Let's dive into your story. So you picked 4 reboots you think worked the best over, and this spans quite a long period of time, and then the 4 that you think are the worst, and then you name some honorable mentions. So do you want to start with best or worst?
You know what? It's always fun to start with the worst, isn't it?
I agree. That's what I wanted you to pick. Okay, let's start with the worst. So just pick one from your list. Let's talk about it.
Well, I'll start with my first pick. And, you know, I really thought about this. I thought there's a lot of bad revivals. or reboots, and which one do I want to pick? I've got to go with Charlie's Angels.
Last time I cracked one of these, it was under 2 minutes, but that was after 2 Cosmos and I was hanging upside down.
That's my girl.
I have to go with Charlie.
I fully forgot, having read this, I was like, oh yeah, but I fully forgot this show was rebooted.
And it ran for 4 episodes in the fall of 2011. And look, they did a couple of theatrical movies that did very well. And logically, at some point, they're going to bring back Charlie's Angels. Unfortunately, it was just a shambles. It just did not work. And ABC, I believe, if I'm correct, I think that was the first new series yanked, you know, canceled that fall. And they just, you know, they gave it 4 episodes, which is certainly not a lot, but it just, you know, they tried to make it, you know, up to date, and one of the characters was a spy or something or whatever, and it was horrible. It was really horrible. I mean, if you want to watch Charlie's Angels, get the DVD of the first season from the original series. That's Charlie's Angels. You know, Farrah Fawcett and Kate Jackson and Jacqueline Smith, those are Charlie's Angels, not this crop. I don't think anybody remembers this show.
I was like a giant Charlie's Angels fan as a child. Like, I played it in school. It was totally ridiculous. So, yeah, I think I felt like it was a little bit sacrilegious to revive it. So I did enjoy the movies, though, with Drew Barrymore.
The movies did very well. Listen, you know, they were very well, and it worked. And then, you know, I kept thinking, I'm surprised they haven't brought back Charlie's Answers yet as a series. Poof, there it is, and poof, there it goes.
So tell us the fun did you know fact from this one.
Well, this is interesting. You know, Robert Wagner was originally offered the role of Charlie in the remake, but he couldn't do it. So he was not the voice. But, you know, Robert Wagner, you know, going back to the original Charlie's Angels, that was Aaron Spelling. And of course, Robert Wagner is remembered for being on Aaron Spelling's Heart to Heart. So this kind of would have been a nice, you know, and it was an easy role. You're not even seeing, you're just on the phone being Charlie, but he just couldn't do it. And which I thought was interesting.
Who was Charlie in the first one? Was it John Forsythe?
John Forsythe, right. Well, you know, the voice of John Forsythe. And then, of course, we knew John Forsythe for going over to Dynasty as Blake Harrington, right. Which, of course, is now on the CW, ready to get canceled. So it all circles back, you know. It just completely circles back. But,
well, and starring, just to stick with the Spelling Entertainment, starring Grant, and I can't remember his last name, but from Melrose Place, which was also Spelling, so.
Grant Show. Right. That's interesting, Paige. That's interesting because Grant Show, of course, was on the original Melrose Place, and Melrose Place was rebooted on the CW, and that made my honorable mention of worst.
I was just going to say, wait, why haven't they rebooted Melrose? But they did. Okay.
They have.
They did have. It came, it went.
Yes. Oh, it's hard. Oh, my God. You know, I will tell you this, Paige. Had I done five of each, the reboot of Melrose Place would have been on the main list because it was truly terrible. It was truly, and I was a big fan of the original, and they even brought back Heather Locklear, you know, to
guest star. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it was terrible.
Melrose,
wow.
We used to gather. Now, okay, so Melrose was on, I think it was in my 20s, and we used to gather always to watch it. It was like fun. Get your friends all together and watch that show.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Normally, once I start with a series, I stay with it. But I abandoned Melrose Place, and after the fifth season, once Lisa Rinna came in, I'm like, I'm out of here. I just decided it wasn't, you know, I just wasn't into it. But when I heard they were rebooting it, and I said, I'll check it out. I mean, to me, I always want to sample it, but it was truly, truly terrible. But I always laughed at that show because, you know, the original Melrose, they're living in this trendy apartment building with a nice pool smack in the middle. Half of them don't have real jobs, but they're living on Melrose Place. How do they afford this? But
when I moved to Los Angeles, when I moved back to Los Angeles in 2002, honest to God, I was looking for Melrose Place. I was like, this is what I am owed. I am moving to Los Angeles. And
right.
It was really not a thing. There are apartment buildings like that, but they are not common.
And then you hear what the rents are. You're like, I'm not moving here. It's crazy.
I had to move there. But yes, the rents were crazy. It's true. More crazy now.
Yes.
All right, next one.
My next one is, here's a show. I don't know if you remember or anybody was going to remember. What's Happening Now? Do you remember it?
No. Baby
Bear. You remember the
original? I certainly remember the original. Yes, of course.
Right. You know, this is very interesting. The original was, you know, it was based on the theatrical Cooley High. It followed three young African-American teenagers living in the Watts section of Los Angeles. And it was kind of a cheesy, fun comedy. It was one of those shows that was so bad, it was really good. And I watched it. I enjoyed it. And then, you know, this was an era in the 80s. You saw a lot of original first-run sitcoms in syndication. And they decided, let's reboot it. We'll call it What's Happening Now. We're going to marry off the main character, Raj. And the sister, Dee, there was the younger sister who always had those smart mouth remarks.
Mm-hmm.
She was now in college, so she only made periodic appearances. So they brought in a Forster girl, a young Forster child, a young girl. So she would spit out all the jokes and all the cracks. And Rerun and Dwayne were back, and they were roommates. And Raj and Shirley owned the restaurant they hung out in. It was terrible. And then Rerun, Fred Berry. I'm laughing because, you know, I sat and watched this is beyond me, but Fred Berry exited after the first season of the revival due to a contract dispute. So Rerun was gone, and it was just an endless thing, but it ran for three seasons.
Why does it require two exclamation points?
Well, because it was so terrible when you write it, you have to have two exclamation points. It's funny. It's very funny. When I typed it, you know, before I handed it in, I'm like, let me check how many exclamation points, because I thought there were three. I'm like, no, there's only two. Okay, that's good. But man, this was a bad show. I mean, and like I said, the original sitcom was truly terrible also, but it was fun. Once this came back, it was, oh my goodness, let's leave well enough alone and end this. But they dragged it on for three seasons. And, you know, and it's funny, I don't think this has aired since it originally ran. I don't think it's anywhere, which is, you know, you would imagine somebody might pick it up. There's certainly enough episodes.
Yeah, that it's not anywhere is odd. I mean, now it could show up on Bounce or, you know, there's many places where it could go. All right, tell us the fun fact.
This is very interesting. You know, when I was looking at this, I remembered thinking that the actor who played Raj, Ernest Thomas, and rerun, Fred Berry, they were supposed to be teenagers. I'm like, they were not teenagers. And I thought Raj was like around, Ernest Thomas was in his 30s. He was actually 27. And then rerun, Fred Berry, was 25. So they were playing teenagers. And then the third teen on the show, Haywood Nelson, he was 16 in real life. So you had 27, 25, and 16, which I find very interesting. You know, that in itself is a column, because there are so many discrepancies with ages on these shows that you have to laugh. But this was one of them. So they played teenagers, and they were in 27 and 25, which is interesting.
Which is old for teenagers. All right, next one.
Well, you know, I really had to think about this one. I was kind of like, you know, I wasn't sure, but then I thought, okay, I'm gonna choose Love Boat the next wave. Do you remember it?
No.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people are not going to remember, because although this show actually was renewed for a second season, what happened at the time was UPN didn't have much of an audience. They were looking for a new identity. And they came up with the idea, let's bring back the Love Boat. And we're going to cast it with Robert Urich. And this will be our new identity. I remember they made a big push about this, and it was a mid-season replacement. You know, it came on in mid-season. And it didn't do terrible in the ratings, but it didn't do great. So they brought it back for a second season. And ultimately, it's the same nonsense as the original. You basically have five people working on an entire cruise liner, and people come on the show. I mean, did you ever stop to think of the original Love Boat? Who else works on this ship?
Well, where is all the? Do I want to watch a cast of thousands working on the cruise ship? I do not.
Well, this time, you know, Robert Urich took over for Gavin McLeod, and it was the same nonsense. You know, actors that needed work would pop on the Love Boat in the next wave. And they'd come on the show, that their characters would have problems, they'd be getting divorced, they all these bad things. And by the end of the cruise, everything was great. I mean, I should go on a cruise.
Yeah,
I could use.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think I should go on a cruise, because I have some issues that I need to resolve. So if I go on a cruise, when I leave, everything's great. It just reeked from. It was horrible.
Unless you find the Real Housewives cruise, then it won't be better.
The Real Housewives cruise. But, you know, it's funny. I remember watching this. And, you know, I don't know if I should be bragging or not even telling you this, but I watched all of these shows. I sat and watched.
Not telling. You should not tell anyone that.
I should not tell anyone. But the opening theme was really good. It was like they took the Love Boat theme.
Yeah.
But they made it a reggae theme. It was they used the lyrics, but it had a reggae tone. It was the theme itself was really good. And it's funny, when I added the YouTube footage, I played, you know, the clips, and I was like, snap my fingers, looks really good. But, man, it stunk bad. It was really bad. Bad.
And what's the fun fact on this one?
Well, this is very interesting. This is really interesting, Paige. Robert Urich. And I know this because I've done this calculation in the past, since I seem to have no life other than TV factoids. He appeared in his career. Now, I want you to keep in mind that he passed away, I believe, in 2003. He passed away in his 50s. He was very young. In the course of his career, he appeared in 13 regularly scheduled scripted series as a series regular. That's more than anybody else historically. And I checked this. The second name that came to mind that possibly could have beat him was Betty White.
Yeah.
And I looked. Betty did 12. She was on 12 scripted. And I'm only talking about scripted. I'm not talking about any non-scripted.
Right.
But this guy constantly from Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice in 1973, which I'm sure nobody remembers. That was based on the movie.
Yeah.
That was in 1973 through Emeril in 2001. In a span of 28 years, he appeared in 13 shows. And that's and I think we remember him the most for Spencer for Hire and Vegas.
Vegas.
I think those are the two. And he was also, this is also interesting. This is a tie to the revival craze. He was in the original SWAT on ABC.
But the original SWAT, did it run longer than two seasons? Or were those,
It ran for a season and a half. It was a mid-season show from Aaron Spelling, and it did pretty well for ABC, and they brought it back, and then by the second season, it petered out, and they canceled it. And this SWAT on CBS is doing moderately well. I think it'll get a second season. But I remember he did a show with Faye Dunaway on Friday nights on CBS, a sitcom called It Had to Be You, and that got yanked after like six episodes. But I remember he was on Tabitha, the spinoff from Bewitched. So this man constantly worked. He had a great career.
I think the difference between him and Betty White, though, is her shows ran longer, because if you look at this list that you have, I mean, Vegas was one of the longest running at four seasons. So none of these shows stayed on too long, whereas, I mean, Mary Tyler Moore and, I mean, all those shows, I think Rhoda, I think she was on. No, that's wrong. Anyway, but her shows ran a little longer, so she had a little less time. Golden Girls ran for a while, you know, so she was more occupied.
Yeah, she had seven seasons on Golden Girls. She was on Mary Tyler Moore for four seasons, and she had six seasons on Hot in Cleveland. So that already is 17 seasons.
On Hot in Cleveland.
Yeah, that started out great, and boy, did that end on a dumb note. But okay, that's a whole other discussion. But so Robert Urich, to this day, despite the fact that he passed away so young, has been in the most scripted shows of any actor. Congratulations to him. Amazing.
Congratulations and RIP. Okay, next and last one of this category.
Well, this was a shared, fiasco. I had to mention both of them. The New Odd Couple on ABC, which was on from 1982 to 83, and then the recent Odd Couple on CBS. Now, what's interesting about these two is the New Odd Couple was the first revival, and that was with Damon Wilson and Ron Glass in the roles of Oscar and Felix. Now, what was interesting about that was they took our scripts, half of the episodes, about half, were the same scripts from the original sitcom with Tony Randall and Jack Klugman. So I remember watching that and thinking, wait a minute, I've seen this already. But then again, there was a strike going on that season, so I guess they needed, I don't know, they just needed the scripts.
Yeah.
But that was the first fiasco. And then this recent Odd Couple, which, did you watch it?
No, it did not.
I did. Again, I kept watching every week thinking it's going to get better, and it just didn't. I always thought Matthew Perry would have been better as Felix, not Oscar. So I thought it was miscast, and it just didn't work, but it managed to stay on the air for like 2.5 seasons. And I think the moral of the story is stop remaking The Odd Couple. I think it's enough.
I think this is another one where it's pretty personality based. So, and I feel like, can you beat Jack Klugman and Tony Randall? I don't really think so. So yeah, why? Unless you've got an amazing cast, I don't think it's worth it. Or you have original cast, which obviously on that one you cannot have. But I mean, those are two, Jack Klugman and Tony Randall are two greats.
Were tremendous. But it's interesting because the movie of the same name with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, I remember watching the movie and at that time I was a little kid thinking, well, how could they recast these roles?
Yeah,
but
that's
true. Jack Klugman and Tony Randall just clicked, and that's who the Odd Couple is. And I think at this point, enough. Don't remake it again. We've seen it. It's been there, done that. Let it go.
Or do it like do women, or I mean, do something. Take the theme and do a huge twist on it. But I'm not a giant fan of reboots anyway. But yeah, I think let this one lie.
Yeah. Exactly. But it was interesting, and I'll give you the fun did you know fact for this. Obviously, we talked about Jack Klugman and Tony Randall, but Jack Klugman was not the first choice to play Oscar Madison in the 70s sitcom. It was Mickey Rooney and Martin Balsam. Now, Martin Balsam ultimately ended up on Archie Bunker's Place, and he was the one that got bludgeoned on the original Psycho from Alfred Hitchcock. So he was considered to play Oscar. He probably could have been pretty good in that role, but Mickey Rooney as Oscar Madison? I don't know. I don't know. And then, you reminded me of something, Paige. There was also an animated spinoff called The Oddball Couple, which ran on Saturday mornings.
And that was also that is deep in the vault.
Deep in the vault.
Digging deep. What else was Mickey Rooney considered to play?
Mickey Rooney was the first choice to play Archie Bunker on All in the Family. How do you like that? Mickey
Rooney.
Just
seems too small.
He does. And, but he never found a successful sitcom. He tried a couple of times, and he just never was able to succeed in the sitcom world. But I don't see Mickey Rooney as Archie Bunker opposite Gene Stapleton. And then he didn't want to. He didn't do it because he felt the character. He didn't want to play a bigot. He didn't think it was funny. Well, I'm sure he changed his opinion on that after the show came out.
I actually just heard an interview with Norman Lear, and he talked about it was with Oprah actually, and he talked about how sometimes even Carol O'Connor struggled with playing that part because they would write things for him. And yeah, he had to be so nasty and so bigoted. And I think it was what Lear said is that O'Connor would fight him and they might fight back and forth. But by the time it got to, shooting that, he would do it and it would be great. And it, because of the way he did it, sort of in like a weird pre-Tony Soprano way, that people still like the character, even though in a way he was sort of repugnant, and he really attributed that to O'Connor's performance, but that it wasn't, that he didn't come that easily to it. Like, he really did struggle.
I also think they softened him up as the years progressed. I mean, once he got to Archie Bunker's place, which was, All in the Family ran for 8.5 seasons, then they gave him Archie Bunker's place, which already was getting a little stupid already. They killed off Gene Stapleton, and now he has two nieces living with him. He actually got a lot softer as the years progressed, but, in hindsight, I just don't see Mickey Rooney sitting in, I just don't see it. But so he didn't get, he turned it down. It would have been a very different show if Mickey Rooney was on it.
How long did Archie Bunker's Place run?
Archie Bunker's Place ran for 4 seasons.
I remember
what happened with Archie Bunker's Place. Gene Stapleton did 6 episodes the first season. She didn't want to do it regularly anymore, and then she decided, I'm done. And they didn't know what to do, so they killed off Edith Bunker, which at the time was unthinkable. And they kept it going for 3 years. It never was really a good show. It wasn't that good, but it ran on Sunday nights, and CBS had a good comedy block, so they left it there. And yeah, so altogether, he played Archie Bunker for 12.5 seasons. It's a long run.
Yeah, I generally also don't think it's a great idea to try to extend a hit show by spinning off a character. So, for example, Joey spinning off of Friends just really did not work. I think you've got the one show that there's two. Well, one show that really did work was Frasier, right? Being spun out of Cheers. But I think with show, it was so not a spinoff because it took that one character, but then they created this whole amazing cast around him. So, I mean, you have to look at it as a whole new property. But otherwise, I think if you don't create that new chemistry, all people think is, well, I really just want to watch this guy in the show that I liked. I don't really want to watch this guy in this sort of created show around him that doesn't give me what I want anyway. So I think that's always kind of a risky move.
Yeah, I agree. And do you remember when Sally Struthers was spun off into Gloria?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Briefly, yeah.
She left All in the Family with Rob Reiner. They didn't want to do it anymore. And then a few years later, she ended up getting her own spinoff sitcom, living in upstate New York, working as a veterinarian's assistant with Burgess Meredith, the Penguin. I mean, this was one of the worst spinoffs I've ever seen. It was terrible. He's the Penguin. What's he doing as a doctor?
He did more than be just the Penguin.
He's the Penguin. No, but that was pretty bad. But that's a whole other conversation. We could go on forever talking about spinoffs.
Forever.
That's another one.
Yeah.
That's another one.
It's too bad Rob Reiner didn't go on to find a career. Just kidding.
No, what has he done? A couple of movies that are pretty damn good.
A lot of directing. Yeah. He went on to get quite a good directing career. Kind of not at the same level of success as Ron Howard, but he certainly created a new career for himself.
He's done very, very well. And yeah, he has believe me, no worries in career-wise, that's for sure.
All right, let's go to the best. So kick us off with that.
Well, I really thought this out. I'm like, what is the best revival? And I do want to say, Paige, it gets a little tricky because sometimes when you look at a revival, it could also be considered a spinoff. You have to be careful with
that. Right.
And I thought about it and thought about it, and I said, you know, I'm going to pick a show that I think most people are going to think that the first revival of it was the original series, which it was not. And that's Dragnet.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California, third largest in the world, 458 square miles. This is part of it, the San Fernando Valley. 97 miles of canyon roads link the valley with Hollywood, Beverly Hills, and points west. Most people take the canyon shortcuts to save time or to enjoy the view. Once in a while, somebody makes the trip for other reasons.
When I was a young kid, I used to watch it. It ran from 67 to 70, but that wasn't the original Dragnet, because the original version ran from 51 to 59. And then they brought it back, and then, of course, there have been other spinoffs ever since that weren't as successful. But this one, I thought, really worked because they had a formula. You know, they brought back the same, what's his name who played Sergeant Joe Friday, Jack Webb. He came back. This time, Harry Morgan was his sidekick, the officer Bill Gannon. This was before he was on MASH. And it was the same formula. It was generic. And I just think it worked flawlessly. And it could have ran longer, but at the time, Jack Webb decided he didn't want to do it anymore. He wanted to work on other projects. But I think Dragnet is the best revival of any television series. Did you? No, I was not old enough to remember that.
No. No. I mean, yeah. I heard of Dragnet, but I was not old enough to watch a detective or police procedural on television. I was watching Sesame Street at that time.
And it was a half hour, you know, like the original. It was just, I thought it was really, really well done. So, you know, and then, of course, you know, a lot of people, when they think of Dragnet, they think of the Tom Hanks, Dan Aykroyd movie, which was very successful. But I think the first revival of all these, you know, revivals of this is the best we've ever seen. It just worked flawlessly. I wish somebody would repeat it. I'd like to see it again.
All right. So, and then, well, this one confuses me a little bit, because so you're saying here there's been three series revivals. So there was the 51 to 59, there was 67 to 70, there was the movie, and then there was...
There was a syndicated version of it also, the new Dragnet.
No, and then there was another one, too.
Oh, I'm forgetting the other one, which is my Did You Know item.
Right.
There's another one.
So one in 2003 Ed O'Neill.
This was interesting. Ed O'Neill, who at the time we knew from Married with Children, ended up went. Dick Wolf got a series order on ABC, Dragnet, to revive it again. Ed O'Neill was Joe Friday, and it premiered in mid-season. It did well enough to get a second season renewal. They decided they were going to change its name to LA Dragnet, and it ran for another season, and then it just disappeared. So it ran for a season and a half. And of course, now when you think of Ed O'Neill, you think of him as Modern Family.
Right. Yeah, although I still think of him probably Married with Children. That's really what he's synonymous with for me, but certainly Modern Family. And Modern Family, I think, probably now has run longer than Married with Children, right?
No, Modern Family is in season 9. Married with Children ran for 10 and a half seasons.
All right,
but Modern
getting
Family,
close.
Well, Modern Family is already picked up for next season, which will take it into season 10. If it gets into its 11th season, then it does last. So there's still a couple of seasons left. And I actually think that at some point we'll definitely see a new version of Married with Children, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
But surprisingly, we have not yet. Yeah.
No, I'm surprised. The minute he's free from Modern Family, I would imagine they're going to jump, let's do a new, you know. But Katie Sagal's busy now on Superior Donuts, so... Then again, they could have a new cast if they wanted to do it again.
I could see Ed O'Neill and Katie Sagal and Christina Applegate. I mean, I can see none of them wanting to come back and do that. They've just all moved quite far ahead of that, you know?
Well, money talks, so who knows? I mean, if they're throwing a lot of cash, I mean, what the heck? But I was never a big fan of Married with Children. It wasn't my cup of tea, but listen, that was a, you know, 10 and a half seasons on Fox, and it launched a network. So that was pretty impressive. And now he's got Modern Family, which, you know, two long-term hits. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and Modern Family is cha-ching.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. And listen, by next season, they're going to want to keep it on. They're not going to want it to go. So I would imagine ABC will be, you know, looking for an 11th and 12th season of that. So that's going to live on.
That it's going to be a race to see who stays on the longest, Modern Family or Big Bang.
Well, Big Bang, I mean, look, who knows what's going to happen with Big Bang. There's no way CBS is going to let this thing go. Even if they, you know, some of the actors say they're not doing it, I could totally see them spinning off Sheldon and Amy. And, you know, they're married and they move to another place. And who knows? They're not.
No, don't do that. That'd be a good example of me being like, don't do that spinoff, because it's either you have the whole chemistry or not. I don't think Sheldon and Amy, unless they have this amazing other cast, but I don't think Sheldon and Amy work on their own. You need the other people for them to bounce off of. You especially need Penny and Leonard, you know, just to.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
But anyway, we really are talking about like pie in the sky here, but. So.
Right. I mean, this conversation could be spun off in many directions.
I know, so we're gonna try to rein it in. All right, next pick.
Hawaii Five-0. And I actually wrestling with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, I was wrestling with. Should I make it the number one pick? Listen, it's a formula. It's set in a beautiful place. Each episode, you know, it just works. And originally, again, I watched the original show that ran for 12 seasons. And to me, it was like there's only one Steve McGarrett, that's Jack Lord. And then Alex O'Loughlin comes on, and, you know, it works. It just is a formula that works. It's in its eighth season. It's four seasons short of the original. I'm certain CBS is going to bring it back next year. So this could live on for several more seasons. Who knows? But
current version, do you feel like it has a relation to the former version, or do you feel like it's really just a new show, but it's set in Hawaii and it's called Hawaii Five-0?
No, I feel like it has a relation because, you know, they purposely look. They have the same theme song. When they show the opening credits, when Alex O'Loughlin is standing on a balcony, that's the same balcony that Jack Lord stood on. So there's roots to the original. And then there's one actor that's been in both, which I'll get to in a moment. But I feel like it's kind of like it has roots to the original, but it's a generic formula that just works, you know. And for the CBS audience on a Friday night, you can't miss. And originally it ran on Monday night on CBS and did well. So for them, you know, it just works. And at some point, this is going to end. And years down the road, I could see another Hawaii Five-0. I could see this coming back again. It just works. There's something about it. It's the setting. It's the formula. It's the, you know, actors. It just, all of it works. So, yeah.
It's interesting, don't they pair Hawaii Five-0 with Blue Bloods? And Blue Bloods stars Tom Selleck. No, never mind. I'm getting Tom Selleck mixed up with Magnum P.I., which is set in Hawaii, but has nothing to do with Hawaii Five-0. Never mind.
Well, listen, Blue Bloods, both of them work hand in hand on Friday night, attracting older male viewers. It just works. And, you know, they both could live on for several more seasons.
All right. Tell us about the actor who appeared on both.
Well, this is interesting. There's an actor named Al Harrington. In the original, he played a detective for a couple of, he wasn't on for the 12 seasons. I think he was on for like three seasons. He played a detective named Ben Kokua on the original Hawaii Five-0. Now he comes back sporadically as in another character, Mamo Kahiki. I think that's how you pronounce it. So he's been in both shows, which I find very interesting. And so that's the link to the original. But I think there's other links also.
That guy was just like,
well,
I live in Hawaii, and if you're going to make a show here, maybe I'll be in it. But otherwise, I'm just going to stay here in Hawaii.
Yeah,
I agree with him.
Listen, that's not listen. If you're an actor and you get Hawaii Five-0 and you're living like half the year in Hawaii, I don't think that's really bad.
No, I think that's good. I think I would.
And then
stay.
The original, James MacArthur was on the original. He played Danny Williams. They wanted him to come back to this show as a guest star, but then unfortunately he passed away.
That makes it hard to come back.
Yeah, well, he came back in spirit.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next one.
You know, this is a pick that when I first heard that Netflix was doing this, I was rolling my eyes. Please don't do this. because this was my favorite Norman Lear sitcom, One Day at a Time.
I swear to God, if that vieja calls me Maria one more time.
Mrs. Doyle has Alzheimer's.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Hey, I'm messing with you. She's just racist.
And I wasn't looking forward to, but of course I was curious. And you know what? This thing is a really good show. And you know what really sets it apart? They're not copying One Day at a Time, the original. This is a original sitcom now that stands on its own 2 feet. That's called One Day at a Time. They didn't have to call it One Day at a Time.
Right.
They could have very easily found another title for it, because there are similarities, but then there aren't similarities. But I just think what makes this work is the fact that they're not copying what Norman Lear did with the original. But what's interesting is they also focus on various issues that are happening out there the same way the original did. But again, they're not trying to recreate what the first one was. They're standing on their own, and it really works. Do you watch it?
No, but I've heard great things about the show. Critics across the spectrum really praise the show, and also critics that I feel generally don't like sitcoms necessarily also have said really good things about it. So I think this one, though, what you kind of just said is it's barely a reboot. You know, it takes the name, but it really sort of, broaches new ground. It goes someplace different.
Well, I sort of wondered when they first announced it why they were calling it one. Again, my initial perception was I don't want to see somebody being Bonnie Franklin and Valerie Bertinelli. I don't want to see that. And that's not what you get. You're getting a different show with the same name. You know, again, she's a single mother. She has two kids, you know, which is what Bonnie Franklin had. But Bonnie had two daughters. This mother has two daughter and a son. So there's the similarities, but there aren't. And then, of course, the Schneider, the building manager in both. But it's sort of like it's strange. Yeah, it's not. It is a revival, but then again, it isn't. It's kind of in the middle.
Right. Right. All right. This fact that you have is not that fun, but why don't you tell us?
Yeah, you know what? What stands out about the original One Day at a Time, I always found very interesting that, you know, All in the Family, when Jean Stapleton as Edith Bunker turned 50, there was a storyline that she was a rapist, tried to attack her in her house.
Right.
And
I think she was raped in her house in that storyline.
She almost was. It didn't. What happened was, unfortunately, she was able to get out of that situation. But originally that was planned for Bonnie Franklin on One Day at a Time. Anne Romano was going to be the victim or the potential victim. But then Norman Lear decided that he didn't want it to be Bonnie Franklin. He wanted it to be Jean Stapleton because he wanted to send the message out that anyone at any age could be the victim of rape. And, you know, a middle-aged woman turning 50, you know, was different than Bonnie Franklin playing Anne Romano. So he decided, let's do it on All in the Family instead of One Day at a Time. But I always found that to be very interesting.
I just remember that. I mean, that episode played when I was very young, but I remember how much it resonated. And I think, you know, it was a pretty shocking thing to do in a sitcom and in that time, which is why Norman Lear is who he is, you know?
Oh, my God. You know what? He was, and this is, he's 95 years old, Paige, and he's still working.
I know. He's still out there.
95.
He's everywhere. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Amazing.
I feel like actually he sort of had a revival himself. You know, like I've really seen him out doing interviews, and he was at Nappy. Like he's been out at shows. He's been producing. It's quite incredible.
And he has a sitcom pilot of next season in the works, you know, focusing on older characters that I'm hoping gets on the air. I mean, this is a guy that, he's 95 years old. It's incredible. He's like the Betty White of whatever. I mean, he just keeps ticking. It's great.
I think in a way that's, I mean, now we digress again, but I think in a way that's a secret to staying young is staying engaged. You know, I think Betty White is so engaged. I think Norman Lear is so engaged, and it makes them kind of ageless.
Exactly. I mean, what are they going to do? Be sitting home watching repeats of Murder, She Wrote? They're still active. They're still working, and it's great. I think it's tremendous.
Creating,
I had the honor of meeting him a few years ago. Tremendous, really. And I've interviewed him a couple of times. Great guy.
All right. So let's do the last one. Although this is one I feel like we've talked about quite a bit, so we don't need to get into it too much. But what's your last one of the best reboots?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's Will and Grace. I mean, we've talked about it, like you said. It's not brain surgery. The four characters, they're now in their 50s or close to it. They really haven't evolved. They act schmucky in every episode, and it's funny. And, you know, and it just works. It just is, you know, it works. It's already renewed for next season. I could see it lasting several more seasons, and it works. That's why we're starting to see all these other revivals in the works, because Will and Grace is working. Now everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, I don't think Will and Grace started it, but I think Will and Grace did well enough that that is when people started digging around in the archives to see what they could bring back.
Exactly, exactly. So it works. Congratulations. And I'm looking forward to it coming back now that the Olympics are ending.
All right. I hesitate to give Shelley Morrison more time on our podcast, but tell us your fun fact.
My fun fact is I recently had dinner with her. I was at the press tour and I met she and her husband for dinner. She was offered to come back. You know, she was, you know, they wanted her to revive her character, Rosario. She decided she doesn't want to act anymore and that she's retired. So ultimately, they killed off her character. I mean, but they did want her to come back. You know, she said it wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to be every episode. It was going to be recurring, and she just decided not to do it. But what I found really interesting, this is a cool fact. So I go to this restaurant with Shelley Morrison, and somebody recognized her from The Flying Nun. I'm like, Shelley, that's a big compliment that they recognize her from The Flying Nun. I mean, she played Sister Sixto on The Flying Nun in the 1960s, and somebody remembered her for that. So, yeah.
You say so here that The Flying Nun was an inane 1960s sitcom, but I remember, I don't know why I remember, because, again, I was not really a person in the 60s, but I do remember The Flying Nun, and I feel like it was Sally Field, and it was, I don't know. I don't remember it being inane, but maybe when you're that young, nothing is inane.
Well, I was really young at that time myself, and I remember it being very inane. I remember thinking, why is she flying? And what is going on here?
Because she had that hat.
I'm hoping beyond hope
really
that nobody.
Why is she flying? How do you make a whole show around that premise?
Well, I just hope that no network or anyone. I hope nobody decides to ever remake that show. Please let it live on in repeats somewhere else. Don't bring it back, which I don't think anybody will. I don't think
now
anybody
they will.
But
now they will because you mentioned.
Oh, if you'll just indulge me for one more minute, I do want to mention one more thing. I originally had another pick in the best of. I decided that I didn't think anybody would remember the show, so I took it out. But it's called The Life of Riley. Do you remember that show?
Nope. But I know the phrase, The Life of Riley.
Well, this is an example of a show that I'm even too young to really. I wasn't alive when it was on. Originally, it was with Jackie Gleason, 1949 to 50. It was a sitcom on NBC, and it didn't survive past the first season because they lost the sponsorship. And they brought it back in 1953 with William Bendix. Gleason was busy then with The Honeymooners, or The Jackie Gleason Show, and it ran for another 6 years. And I think that was probably the first, or one of the first, series revivals in the history of television. And that was The Life of Riley. But I took it off because I just didn't think people would remember it. But that's worth remembering.
Mark, you are a veritable encyclopedia of television. It is remarkable.
I love this stuff, Paige. I just had a blast with this. This was fun to do. So thank you for that.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right, everyone, go check out Mark's piece. It's at brief.promaxbda.org. And if you want to weigh in on your own, you can tweet us at promaxbda. But where can they tweet you at, Mark? Or what's a good way if people want to troll you?
My hashtag is very simple. It's Mark with a C, Berman, and that's me.
Okay. All right, Mark, thank you. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you, Paige. Have a great one.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Take care.
Paige Alpiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Laferne Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video Helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow Laferne at Laferne Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.